The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Everybody knows that to take and excise the bad skin, bad cells, sometimes it hurts.
That's right. But then you get healthier. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do on this. I am trying not to do any new age stuff here on the program. Mostly middle age. In my case, I'd have to live a really, really... For me to be middle age, I would have to absolutely shatter the world's longevity record. You know, somebody says, yeah, he's on the back nine. Well, I'm not on the back nine. I'm a hole number 14, 15. This is Look Back Friday. And it's a little hard for me to look back these days because you can't get your neck around far as you used to. You know, you see these little kids, man, their neck goes around 180 degrees. I have to bend from the waist to get my neck around that direction. So we'll get to that in a second. Some of these calls up there. Andrew Krucek, producer man, editor man, takes care of the calls. One of the reasons we do Look Back Friday is because it's just so much more I want to say, and so many calls, I really do, but because we get a fair amount of calls per program, you can't do that. I mean, you're trying to balance it between what can I say that might be helpful to somebody in some circumstances, and at the same time, not go in all the directions you could possibly go, and that's why we don't do therapy here. Just hopefully educate a little bit. This happened, I don't know, back when we had the 10 kids at home, and they were 12 and under. I came home, and the kids were kind of roaming around outside, and some of them were in the family room still in their pajamas, a couple of them outside playing in the mud with food boxes and wrappers scattered all over the front porch. My wife's car door was open, as was the front door to the house. No sign of the dog. I don't know where the dog went. Went into the foyer, I found an even bigger mess. A lamp had been knocked over, the throw rug was wadded against one wall. TV was blaring loudly, some cartoon channel. Family room had toys and items of clothing scattered all over the place. Went into the kitchen, dishes were in the sink, breakfast food was spilled on the floor, fridge was wide open, the dog food was spilled on the floor, broken glass under the table, and a small pile of sand, which was, I guess, from the sandbox, was spread by the back door. I got scared. I ran upstairs real quick. Tripped over some toys and piles of clothes on the steps, looking for my wife. I thought, well, maybe she's ill or something serious had happened. I was met with a trickle of water coming out of the bathroom door. I looked inside. I found the wet towels, soap, scum, toys all over the floor. Miles of toilet paper were in a heap. And toothpaste was all over the mirror. Went into the bedroom. I found my wife still curled up in bed in her pajamas. It looked like she was contentedly reading a novel. She looked at me and smiled. Said, how'd your day go, Ray? I looked at her and said, what happened here today? She smiled. She said, you know, every day when you come home and you ask me what I did today? Yeah. Well, today I didn't do it. story. I personalized it. Story. What was I going to talk about today? I had it. I had the monologue, and then it slipped my mind when I read that. Let's piggyback on something that I said probably some weeks ago in a monologue. I was talking about trait language. A very common trait that parents describe is that he's an angry child. He's just so angry. Now, this can be any age kid. It can be a 3-year-old, a 7-year-old, 15-year-old, 29-year-old. Angry child. When you're dealing with younger kids, particularly, that's probably a mischaracterization. Kids are naturally wired good by God. And I don't mean good in the sense of countering the Christian concept of fallen nature. But what I mean is, by and large, kids are zestful. They're full of energy. They're upbeat. That's the natural expression of kids. So to say a kid is an angry child implies there's really something pathological here. What is this kid? Is it, you know, angry implies that's his trait. He's got this low level of some kind of irritation that erupts every so often. So I explore with the parent what they mean by angry. Well, when is he angry? When do you see this? In other words, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to take this from a trait to a state. Meaning, what is the circumstance that you're most likely to see this anger show itself? And almost always they will say, well, when we don't let him do something he wants to do, or when we stop him, or when we discipline him. So I say, then what you're saying is that he erupts, or however, verbally or otherwise, when he doesn't get his way. Well, yeah, that's pretty much it. Is that anger? Or is that frustration? What would happen if whatever he wanted to do, at least in the short term, you allowed? You didn't deny him something that he wanted to do or to eat. You didn't make him do something he didn't want to do, like go to bed or pick up stuff that he left strewn all over the place. Or you didn't discipline him when he deserved discipline. You just talked to him, that's all, and you never really held him accountable. You didn't use any consequences. What would happen? Well, he wouldn't be as angry. Probably much less angry, right? Yes. Much less frustrated, right? Yeah. Do you see what you're saying? You're saying that what we're labeling an angry child is really a child who shows frustration when things don't go as he would wish and mom and dad don't act as he would wish. So really, he may not be an angry child at all, but he may be more trip switch in his emotions because he's gotten used to pushing through your discipline. And far more often than not, the parent will say, yes, we're defeated. Yes, we're inconsistent. Yes, we get lazy. Yes, we allow it. Yes, we argue with him. Yes, we get carried away. Yes, we're not sure what to do. So, in fact, what is happening is that the parent feels like, with their discipline, they can't or won't control this child. Consequently, he gets more upset when he doesn't get his way. And this increasing upset, sometimes in intensity, sometimes in just frequency, he used to get upset twice a day, now he's getting upset 9 times a day, is labeled anger. He's an angry child. Now, it looks like anger, because that's what anger looks like. He's throwing a fit, or he's yelling, or he's screaming, or he's doing something that certainly looks like an emotional eruption, and it is. But where the mischaracterization is coming in is that this is really pretty specific. It's a state. It occurs under certain circumstances that the parent could go a long way in changing. However, because it occurs with increasing frequency so often, it looks like it's a characteristic of the child. So actually, when parents come into my office and describe a kid as an angry child, I've really, with exploration and several sessions, not come to the conclusion very often that he truly is an angry child. He's a child who has pushed on their discipline, and he gets frustrated when it doesn't go as he would wish. And actually, if they improve their discipline, almost always they say, he's nowhere near as angry as he used to be. When we come back, speaking of angry, little Rachel is 5 years old, and she just is not nice to her brother. Now, you might think, well, it's her 3-year-old brother. I'm not sure about that because I don't exactly remember the call. But it could be an older brother. We'll find out.
My older two kids actually would even apologize to their friends when they heard me telling their moms about you. They would even say, I am so sorry.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Messier with an important message for Catholic families experiencing the effects of the shutdown of schools and employment. Catholic education is essential. You can save $100,000 if your high school students continue their Catholic education online, owning 75 college credits and an accredited associate's degree for just $3,500 per year, and an accredited bachelor's degree just 1 year later, age 19. To learn how, go to angelicum.net.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Tomorrow, Catholics celebrate the Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, a feast with profound lessons for our struggle against abortion. At the end of her life, Mary was assumed into heaven, not only in spirit, but in her body. Because the body is just as much a part of any person as the soul. Mary's assumption is a sign that God ultimately saves us and will raise us in body and in soul. Some who justify abortion say they don't know if the child has a soul, but that's beside the point. What matters is that the child has a body. And when we know that abortion destroys the body, we have all the information we need to know it's wrong. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
The Archdiocese of Detroit Cemeteries would like to invite you to 3 of our locations to participate in our annual St. John Vianney Volunteer Cleaning Day, Saturday, August 15th, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 12 noon. Please join our faith community as we honor our beloved deceased by cleaning headstones at 3 of our locations, Holy Sepulchre in Southfield, Our Lady of Hope in Brownstown, and St. Joseph Cemetery in Monroe. Refreshments will be served. For more information, please call 248-350-1900.
Dr. Ray Garendi here. Thanks for joining me. You know, I was looking into some different banks, and they all offer you different sorts of come-ons and introductory deals and everything. One of the banks I looked at was a bank called Fifth Third Bank. I pretty much eliminated them. I got a little nervous. If they're going to be in charge of numbered things, which is something I look for in a bank, Fifth Third? I mean, you could have three thirds. You could have third third. Fifth Third, that's 1 2/3. I don't know why that would be the Fifth Third Bank. I'm not sure. Not really sure. Okay, on this Look Back Friday, let's go to Rachel from Rhode Island. We're finding out that this little 5-year-old daughter. Now, keeping in mind that those of you who have raised your children already have children that are older, and think, that's not a question I could relate to. One of the purposes of Look Back Friday is to extrapolate the call, where possible, into a broader lesson for life, something that might help us in life. So when you have a situation where the kid's 5 years old, so come on, I don't have any 5-year-old kids left at home, as I don't either, I try to look at it with a broader lens. Let's see if I can do that on this call.
How old is her brother, dear?
8 years old.
Well, wait a minute.
And
he's the big brother.
Yes, he's the big brother. She's feisty.
And she, how did she mistreat him?
It started around just November. And every single day she would say something just hateful, like, you're stupid, you're dumb. And we do not talk to each other this way at all in our family.
Well, wait a minute. No, that's not true. Your daughter does.
Yeah, she does. she's not been raised that way. And so, you know, we said, okay, if you're not going to be kind and sweet, you don't get sweets. So we took out all the sugar. She's not allowed to watch any TV. She's not allowed to play outside except for right on our little porch. We live in a military community, and I think there was some bad influence that was exposed to just neighborhood kids. And the name calling has stopped, but now it has been her flipping them off.
What?
Yes.
She picked that up. Did she pick that up from you?
No.
Oh, okay.
And so we told her what it meant was that she wants a spanking. So when she does that, that means I want a spanking. Like, we're to that point, and she doesn't care. She does it today. She's done it 3 times already just today. It's incredibly frustrating. I don't know what to do. I'm at my wit's end.
No, it's way, way too early to be at your wit's end. She's only 5 years old. Do you know what I think, though? Here's what I think.
Yeah.
Maybe you can agree with me on this. I'm really getting the sense that your little 5-year-old, she probably doesn't have a well-formed conscience yet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's probably immature, you know, being 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And she probably isn't really knows the rules of religion and socialization yet, you know?
Yeah.
Now, my dear, you just agreed with me on all 3 of those. And I was being facetious, because she is 5, and of course she doesn't have a conscience, and of course she's just acting on impulse, and of course she's doing what she saw. That doesn't mean your little girl's this little wretch. It just means
she's
5.
She's a sweet girl to everyone but her parents.
Well, you're going to have to get rid of him. I don't know. Can he live somewhere else? Okay, here's what you do. Like, you're a military family. You get moved around a lot.
Yes.
Just kind of leave him with the sergeant. Say, we'll be back. All right.
So what would you do in this situation?
Oh,
how would you handle
I'll
it?
I'll tell you what I would do. You said something that my spidey sense shrink ears picked up on.
Yes.
That a lot of people, just simply because they don't deal with this stuff, might not pick up on it. You said, well, you know, no TV, she has to play outside right by the porch. And what you meant was, we really shot off our nuclear warhead. We punished her heavily for this. And she still didn't make any difference. Still did it. Mm-hmm. When a parent tells me that, much of the time, what they're saying is, well, we got so frustrated, we didn't know what to do. So we just really laid the consequences on heavily, and it didn't make any difference anyway. Much of the time when a parent says that, they probably underestimated. Now, I can't say this with you because I don't know. You're not sitting in my office. I'd explore this if you were in my office. What has happened, and you said she's done this every day since November.
Right. 5. Yeah.
Let's do the math here. Let's just do the math. Let's say November 1. Now, I'm not supposed to date this program unless Andrew wants to use it, but Andrew, I'm going to date it anyway because I got to do it for math purposes. November, December, half of January. Roughly 75 days. If she did it multiple times a day, let's just say 4. Let's take a low number.
Mm-hmm.
4 times 75 is 300. Now, I know, Rachel, I know, I am positive, my dear, you did not discipline this girl 300 times for this. Matter of fact, my guess is you probably disciplined her 20.
What we do is we give her a spanking, and she has 10 minutes in the corner.
Every
that's
time.
What we do every single time.
Well,
every
if that,
single time.
If that's the case, first of all, you are an incredibly rare parent. Incredibly rare. That's the first thing.
Second, focus on consistency.
God bless you. Well, second thing is probably the 10 minutes in the corner is just is not enough. All right?
Okay.
So here's what I would do to her. Every time she does this, the next five things that she asks for, the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. Whatever it is.
And I hate it. I feel so...
Oh, no.
I feel bad. I'm sticking to my guns.
Nah,
but I feel
no, you don't
terrible.
Feel, oh,
but
no,
she's,
you,
she's
why?
Deciding it.
Well, look,
she's
first of all...
deciding it.
My dear, she's five. Okay, this
I know.
Is, this is not a moral, sinful action. This is a five-year-old. They do this kind of scrap. Here's the frustrating... broader context. The main reason somebody will walk in my office with a discipline issue is that the discipline's not making any difference. Now, in Rachel's case, she says we do this every single time, which is unbelievable. All right? And I don't have any reason to doubt her. But if she were in my office, I would explore that every single time further. I mean, that's beyond human almost. Okay. Most parents are 10 to 20% follow through, if that. And that's usually sufficient. Here's what I think is happening. Well, first of all, this little girl hung with some kids. I mean, for her to use her hands to convey a nonverbal message, she got that somewhere. She got that from the kids. And I think the first thing I think they've already done it. It sounds like they did it. Is to look and see who's around, who's she hanging around, and they may have to make some real major adjustments. That's major. That's like military talk. Sergeant adjustments. Lieutenant adjustments. That said, probably, okay, the spanking, most spankings for little kids are not anything that is really that problematic for the kid. Usually the kid just looks at you like you wrinkled my sweatpants. 10 minutes in the corner. Now, that's twice what the expert types would tell you. You know, she's 5 years old. 5 minutes is enough. Well, no, Rachel says, we're going to do 10. Okay, that's good. I think they definitely, as I described it, I said they have to ratchet this up. Now, that made Rachel feel bad. It's like, wow, because all I'm going to be doing is disciplining my kid. But here's the problem. We underestimate the momentary emotional urge of a behavior. And this is true even with adults. We can be held accountable. It's like the individual who has totally, totally ruined their life with online gambling. They can be held accountable. I mean, their marriage is in trouble. They've lost a job. Just all kinds of things are happening to them. Major league consequences are happening to them. And it's still not enough to alter the conduct. Why? Because at the moment the conduct is tempting you, that particular minute, it wins. And I think that's what's happening to Rachel's daughter. Yeah, she's getting disciplined a lot. But at the moment the brother says or does something the little five-year-old girl just simply can't tolerate, boom, here comes the impulse. The impulse is to say something dumb, mean, or it's to use her hands to convey a nonverbal message. It's impulsive. And Rachel's frustration is, well, look, why isn't she getting this? Well, probably because I think the consequences need to be multiplied, but also because that the child acts at the moment, and consequences are not in her mind at all. The moment is dictating her behavior. Now, over time, that'll change. But you're going to have to be some maturity. One other thing, I'm running out of time, but real quick. When they said they did all those things, took away TV, made her only play outside, I would have asked her, how many times have you done that? Because my guess would be, it would be a couple times, handful of times, when they got particularly frustrated with the recalcitrance of this particular behavior. We'll be right back.
you ever notice how music generalizes? You know, in therapy, they talk about you want to generalize. You want to generalize from the lesson, the insight, the expectation, the suggestion, the strategy that you talk about in therapy. You want to generalize that to real life. Well, music generalizes. Like, you heard that song. I'll bet if we take a poll of all 161 of my listeners now, which is quadruple what it was when I started, about 40 when I started, so that's pretty good if you look at it percentage-wise. They would say that that music most conjures up in them those 70s, perhaps 80s, Private Eye-type TV shows. Mannix, Magnum P.I., Rockford Files. I can't say Mannix, can you? But you notice the names? Mannix. Rockford Files. What was it? What a couple of those other ones? Magnum. Magnum P.I. I mean, those are really manly-type images. Now, Columbo's is not, and neither is Monk. All right, but it does. As soon as I hear that, I immediately see this guy running along, jumping over a car, not opening his car door, just jumping straight into the driver's seat and peeling out. Okay, I've used up enough time. We have an anonymous caller wants to know, how much do you tell kids about your own human frailty? Why do you think your high schooler should know this?
Actually, my wife is the one who asked if she thinks that we should tell them. Because she went to lunch with a girlfriend yesterday, and the girlfriend's, one of her friend's husband is going through rehab, and they were just talking about it. And the girlfriend was asking my wife, she said, do you think your children have any memories that, you know, what do you think they remember, if anything? So that kind of led to the conversation. Do you think we should talk to them about it or let them know? Or do you think they will find out through your family? Should we just kind of approach it first and then also ask them, hey, is there anything that you heard that you were, you know, because we fought a lot when nothing violent or anything. It was just like loud and wanted to know if, you know, if they heard it and they're just wanting to talk about it or anything. I think no, but I wanted to call you. I said, I'm going to call Dr. Ray, see what he has to say.
Always ask the question, what is the need to know? This high schooler, how old?
Two of them, one a senior and one's a freshman, so 17 and 15.
All right, so they were 7 and 5 back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably didn't think, yeah, my parents are fighting because my dad's an alcoholic. You think they thought that?
I don't think so.
No, I think they just saw their parents fighting is what they saw.
Right.
And if you've been a good dad since, and mm-hmm. you say to yourself, boy, I don't know, what part of my past should I tell them? If it were me, I'm not one to say, let me tell my kids all the ways that I screwed up when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
If they're adults, grown, yeah, might get into a talk with them because they have the ability to digest it better. But what would be the reason to tell them, yeah, I went into rehab 10 years ago and I haven't drunk since?
You know, I think if I can, one of the things is, my wife asked, she said, you know, do you think that, because our older son is going to college next year. And she said, do you think you should let him know that, you know, he has a predisposition to alcohol?
Maybe he doesn't. You don't know that.
Right.
You may have just messed with alcohol because you had a lot of matters and there was no genetic predisposition at all. As a matter of fact, if I recall my genetic research on this, it seems to be about a quarter of a predisposition. I think your bigger worry about college is not his predisposition. I think it's college.
Right, I agree with you.
And I think if you're sending him away to a college, out of your sight, out mm-hmm. of your mind, out of your eyes, out of your ears, you've got a pretty good chance you're going to do some real, real stupid things. So for me, you didn't ask this question, but for me, the question would be, I'm not sure I want him to go away to college. Unless he has to, unless he has a a degree that he can only get somewhere, or he's got a scholarship or some reason. But if he's gone away to college just to get a degree in a Bachelor of Arts in something, I didn't really think about that, baby. Do you see how erroneous information can lead to misguided behavior? In this case, the erroneous information is, do you think you need to tell him, based upon your own history of going through rehab for problems with alcohol? Notice I didn't call him an alcoholic. Not, I don't know. And that's one of those summary terms. Do you think you need to tell him about your predisposition to alcohol so he is forewarned? In other words, he avoids the parties where there's alcohol. Well, first of all, that's a big assumption that the kid's going to avoid it. Big assumption. Second big assumption is, as I said on the call, well, we don't know. We don't know that was, in fact, a predisposition. Could be, but it could very much be that it's just some really bad behavior strung together and kept stringing it together that led to the significant problems that led to rehab. That's for sure. But here's the other thing with teenagers. The average teenager wants more freedom than the parent is willing to give him. I think that's a truism. And it's particularly dangerous in the culture we live in. As I've said many, many times in this program, this is not a farm in 1880 in Illinois, downstate Illinois. This is our culture, and our culture just has so many more opportunities for kids to hurt themselves. So many more. So as a result, to tell a child, yeah, well, let me tell you kind of some of the stuff I did when I was younger. It's not unusual for the kid to say in future clashes over freedom, oh, well, look what you did. Look what you did. So why can't I just do blah, blah, blah? They'll use that. Because they want to get the freedom you don't want them to have and you don't think is necessarily good for them at this age. And they'll look at you and say, well, so you were allowed to do it, but I am. No, I'm not. That's very common. That's a pitfall of telling the kids, let me kind of tell you. And again, our caller's wife talked to her friends, and her friends were saying, yeah, you better tell your kids that they got a predisposition to alcoholism. No, they don't. We don't know that. How do you know that? All we know is that their dad got himself in some pretty good trouble and complications because of his misuse of alcohol. We do know that. But I don't know if that's anything the kids need to know. Now, I always tell parents, you want to say something, you can say, well, you know, I did some very foolish things when I was a kid. Very foolish. I did, and they even spilled into my young adulthood. And that is why I'm so protective of you. Because I know what I had to do to pull out of that. And I don't want you to have to go through that. Piggyback a little bit. I want to look back on my look back. It could be a look back quantity squared. The caller was, do you tell your kids that you were in alcohol rehab? The kids are teenagers. I made some thoughts on that. Made some thoughts. But I had some thoughts on that. Another point about this. We live in a culture that says absolute honesty. Absolute transparency is the best way to go. You know, that can cause a whole lot of damage. You sometimes have to ask, is there a reason, a good reason? Will this benefit this transparency? You know, a spouse might say, a lot of times I really think that you, I don't know, I just think that you care about yourself all the time, and I just wanted to tell you that. I know I've never said it,
but I wanted to tell you, because that's what I think, and I want to be transparent. Now, what good would that accomplish? If it's not meant to solve a problem, if it's just meant to say, you want to know what I think about you? You know? I think good judgment has to be coupled with transparency. With the question, as I said, what is the purpose? All righty. Let's go to Rebecca from Illinois. She's having a struggle that a lot of Christians have, which is someone who needs your aid can take advantage of your aid, at least as you see it, and then where does your Christian obligation or charity end?
So our next-door neighbors are quite elderly, and the husband is now in hospice care. They don't have a large support network, so my husband and our daughter and I have largely become their support network. And as the husband is preparing to go, this is just bringing up some difficult memories for me. I'm currently pregnant with our second child, and so obviously I'm not quite as rational as I would like to be.
You sound pretty rational right now.
Well, thank you. So my sister passed away about 5 years ago, and a lot of the things that are happening with our neighbor now are bringing up memories of things that happened when my sister passed. And I'm just having a difficult time dealing with that. So how can I sort of not get over myself, but how can I deal with the grief so that I'm able to be there for them?
Do you want to be there for them as much as they want you to be there for them?
I want to say yes, but the selfish part of me says no.
May not be selfish, Rebecca. It may be just you're hitting your limits of support.
Okay.
To be a good Christian neighbor doesn't mean that you have to do everything possible in their lives. You may have to pick and choose what you can do.
Okay.
The husband is already heading for hospice, so I'm assuming he has a terminal illness?
Yes. Yes, he has terminal cancer. And my sister died of leukemia. So there's quite a lot of correlation there.
And the wife, whom you say has some form of dementia, is still living next to you?
No, she just moved. I think last week she just moved to be closer to her son. So I think that will help. I think that will help things a lot as well.
You want to go visit the husband, right? You'd like to go, but it's painful because it just reminds you of end of life things.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
When you go there and you, if you have already and you visit with him, can you handle it?
Yes, I do. While we're there, I'm fine. My husband has discovered that I will usually break down sobbing at some point, either hours or days afterwards.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with crying because of memories of your sister.
Okay.
That doesn't mean you're slipping here. It just means that, you know, my little brother died when I was 14. And at the time, I was 14 years old. I was kind of into my own life. I was an adolescent. Do you know when it hit me?
When I had
my first kid.
Oh, yeah.
So one might say, well, Dr. Ray, you didn't grieve. Yeah, I did. It just reminded me. And I think that's what's happening with you. If you say to yourself, and say to your husband, hey, I want to go see this man. I don't know how long he's going to live. It's short term here. I want to let him know. I think about him. I love him. I want to visit him. Be prepared, because this is going to remind me some of my sister. And I'm going to cry. Just want you to know that. Okay. That's okay.
Okay.
there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
I mean, sure. That's just a natural sweetheart emotional reaction. And it doesn't mean you're pathological. It doesn't mean you got a screw loose. It doesn't mean you haven't dealt with your sister's passing. I mean, any of that. It just means, very understandably, that you're staring death in the face from this fella, and it reminds you of what you went through with your sister. So I wouldn't worry about it, dear. What I would do is I would just help to the degree you can help, visit to the degree you can visit, and recognize that it's going to rouse up some emotions. This is an extreme example of comfort zone. This is pushing Rebecca well out of her comfort zone. And if she says, here's the key. She says, I want to visit him. If she would say, I really don't. It's too hard. It brings up too much stuff. I sobbed for a day thereafter. For whatever the reason, somebody can blame me for being emotionally fragile. Whatever. This is the sequela. This is what happens to me. But she's not quite saying that. She's saying, no, I do want to support this guy. I do want to visit him a little bit. I mean, his wife is gone. He's suffering with terminal cancer. He's not going to be around that long. You've got to see the face of somebody that cares about him. Okay. Then, is it a balance for Rebecca? I know I'm going to feel bad. I know it's going to dredge up some tough memories. But I can do it. I've used this example before, and it was from Mere Christianity. C.S. Lewis talked about someone seeing a very ill cat on the road. Cat needs attention. The cat needs to be picked up and taken somewhere for attention. Who is really doing the more Christian act? The lover of cats, whose heart is so moved by seeing this ill animal. Or someone who is quite terrified of cats and would want nothing better than just to keep walking. Not at all have anything to do with this, but does it anyway. That is not to say the lover of cats didn't do something good. They did. But the one who really struggles to have any kind of attachment to cats and turns around and helps the cat is really showing courageous Christian virtue. I think that's what Rebecca's doing. Somebody who didn't have the memories that Rebecca had regarding someone so close to her who suffered so much, who said, you know, I just want to go there and see him, and he's a pleasant man, and I just enjoy myself when I'm there. It's a very nice thing to do. But I'll tell you, it's not heroically courageous like what Rebecca is doing. One other point. This is not to say that she will always have this visceral reaction. Maybe after visit number 8, whenever that occurs, she finds herself not quite as distraught as she was. Somehow this is sort of tapering. It's lessening. That could be. Because right now she says, yeah, I'm really rocked emotionally. And her implication is, I will always be rocked emotionally. That may not be. That may not be. I'm Dr. Ray.
So my question is this. I'm out of work. How do I find a job?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Thank you for calling.
So many of you step up during these tough times. Jacqueline, Midland, Michigan. Carmen, Peachtree City, Georgia. Billy, New Rochelle, home of Rob Petrie, New York. Kenneth, Marianne, Sterling Heights, Michigan. Wagdi and Anna, Troy, Michigan. You can renew your membership. You can become a sustaining member. You can make a one-time gift. All you have to do, go to AveMariaRadio.net or click the donate button on the Ave Maria Radio app.
The Archdiocese of Detroit Cemeteries would like to invite you to 3 of our locations to participate in our annual St. John Vianney Volunteer Cleaning Day, Saturday, August 15th, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 12 noon.
Please join our faith community as we honor our beloved deceased by cleaning headstones at three of our locations, Holy Sepulchre in Southfield, Our Lady of Hope in Brownstown, and St. Joseph's Cemetery in Monroe. Refreshments will be served. For more information, please call 248-350-1900. On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Our topics during Cresta in the Afternoon toggle between church teaching and then using that teaching to shine a light on our world. We'll look at Christ and culture, church and world, religion and public life, from abortion to Zechariah and everything in between, biblical criticism, Hollywood productions, academic debate, family and love, prayer and spirituality.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio. Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Good to have you with me on The Doctor Is In on this ending segment of Look Back Friday. I really like the Look Back Friday. I get to talk more. It's not enough that I talk most of the time on the program, but I get to actually talk a little more. We structured it up that way. However, we're looking at the clock here. I don't have enough. The Look Back calls up there are longer. They would take us out past the end of the show, and then we would bounce into the EWTN, or depending upon where we aired this, so they would have to wait for me to get done. I don't know if they want to do that. I want to make a couple more comments, just a little bit about Rebecca, who wants to visit, come to the aid, a little bit, support her elderly, terminally ill with cancer neighbor. His wife is no longer living with him because she is in some stage of dementia, and she has moved, I think, living with a relative or a adult child. So he's by himself. And Rebecca didn't touch on this too much. And this is something I think you'd need to explore a little bit with her if I had a chance to talk at length. Is the gentleman asking for a lot of things that she's trying to be able to juggle with her own family? In other words, she said she's pregnant now, and I don't recall the number of children she said she had, but she sounded young. So she probably has young children, and young children are a lot of demand. Their caretaking opportunities are all over the place. And so if she's feeling pretty exhausted, it is not a shirking of her Christian obligation to charity. It's not a shirking of that to somewhat balance it and say, okay, I'm a mom. I've got kids. I've got to do my very best. During my pregnancy, even, when I'm already tired, to be the best mom and wife I can be to my family. And yes, I can add this to my daily living, but maybe I can't add it in the frequency or the duration that my neighbor gentleman wants. And I think I've seen so many good, faithful Christians feel guilty about stuff like that. Because keeping an honest balance between what are our legitimate demands. I mean, you can't say that a wife and a mother, a young mother with young kids who is pregnant, that's pretty much a legitimate demand, has to feel guilty about saying, you know, I don't volunteer at church as much as I'd like to. Or they have this Bible study on Tuesday nights, and you know, Tuesday nights I'm just exhausted by the time I get the kids to bed, and if I go to Bible study, I think I'd have to suspend Bible study for now. And that's honest. But a lot of people who truly want, and again, I'm not trivializing or trying to make excuses, a lot of people who truly want to live a good Christian life feel bad about stuff like that. They feel guilty. I know when my wife was homeschooling the 10 kids, she would almost oftentimes comment, well, you know, I don't get to adoration as much as I'd like, or
this particular church activity I sure would like to take part in, and I feel bad not being able to. Or so-and-so asked to sign up for meals because somebody's husband passed away and she's an elderly widow, and I didn't sign up for the meals. And she felt bad about that, like she was falling short. 10 kids? Under 12? Homeschooled? A husband who doesn't help? Okay, I made that last part up. Sort of. yeah, for the meantime, those activities, well, now that the kids are pretty much out of the house, yeah, Randy can do a lot more of those activities. She has the flexibility, and she's able to do them. She's able to do errands for elderly. She can juggle her time. But at the time, when she was a busy wife and mother, yeah, she couldn't. But she still had to beat back the feelings that they're having a rosary at church on Tuesday mornings at 10 o'clock. I'm trying to figure it out. It was enough she could do just to make coffee for me, you know? Not that I demanded it every 12 minutes. Good to have you with me on this Look Back Friday. Hopefully we'll see you on Monday, E-Person Monday. Walk with God through the weekend. Walk with God through all weekends.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.